This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Today's guest is psychic medium Amber Hadley. Along with being a psychic medium, Amber also works in marketing and therefore knows all the ways and extent to which people can and can't use technology to get information on a person, the way fraudulent mediums unfortunately might do. In this episode, you'll get a lot of insight into the question that used to bother me early on after good readings. Could they have found that out through some form of advanced technology? Were my protocols as thorough as I thought they were? Are advances in facial technology a risk to being able to have an evidential reading? And if so, to what extent? As a psychic medium, it's really important to Amber that sitters know how to avoid being conned by less than honest psychic mediums. She's also the host of the podcast, The Psychic Apprentice, where each episode features a different guest who's an expert in the field of mediumship, psychic abilities, or paranormal phenomena. I've had the honor of being one of her guests, and I'm thrilled to talk further with her today. Hey, everyone. I'm really excited to let you know about the Science and Spirituality Salons I'm now hosting. During these intimate events, a scientifically verified psychic medium will give all of you readings, and I will give a talk on the science and evidence that changed my mind about an afterlife. This will also be an amazing opportunity to get to meet some of you in person or virtually, and to share more about all the science and data that transformed my worldview and got me through my worst days. These can be hosted in your home, in a nearby cafe with a private room, or they can even be virtual. I've hosted a few already, and they were really special, fascinating, emotional, evidential. So if you're interested in getting a small group together over dinner, brunch, drinks, coffee, to learn more about the science and to get evidential medium readings, send me an email at hello@wtfjusthappened.net and put science and spirituality in the title. Welcome to What the Fuck Just Happened. I'm your host, Liz Enten. If you listened to the intro, you know my story. If not, here's a brief summary. I'm a science-y skeptic, and when my dad died, I took a shot in the dark and decided to investigate if there was any possible evidence of an afterlife. I assumed that was as realistic as Santa Claus, but I was desperate. However, I was so blown away by what I discovered that I wrote a book and launched this podcast. In this podcast, I'll be talking to some fairly normal people about some really weird shit. I speak with everyone from psychic mediums and afterlife researchers to ordinary people who've had some inexplicable experiences. So come, listen. There's no need to draw any final conclusions. Keep an open mind and wonder, what the fuck just happened? Hi, everyone. Today, I am speaking with Amber Hadley. She is a psychic medium. She has her own podcast coming out, and she also works in marketing and can give some really good tips about your identity online and how to make sure your readings and all your information are protected so you can know mediums are evidential. And Amber, why don't you give a full proper introduction?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super happy to be here. Amber Hadley. I have the podcast A Psychic Apprentice, which is really a podcast about learning and going from being a novice psychic to a more professional, polished psychic, and how you can really work on your talents or your gifts that you have, or even how to tap into them, even if you haven't even had experiences before. So that's a big project that I do. I myself am a psychic medium. I've worked with other mediums a lot during this learning journey. I've had lots of experiences ever since I was younger, and I take my listeners on that journey. I am also a marketer. I've been in the field of marketing for almost 15 years. And one of the things that I would really love to talk about today, which you mentioned, is your identity online and what kind of information we can find out about you as psychics or mediums, and how that relates to marketing. That's really my job, and what I get paid for is to know the audience of the brand. So definitely think it's valuable to kind of know that going in. So yeah, definitely happy to be here though.
Happy to have you. And also just, I want to clarify, those would be non-genuine psychic mediums. You as a psychic medium or the Forever Family Winbridge ones aren't even looking online. It's just how to protect your identity so you know, or how to protect yourself from ones that would be dishonest.
Right, right. So you can, just so you have an idea, if there's somebody who's being predatory, what sort of things they can find out about you, what sort of things they can't find out about you, and also tips on how to kind of check that and see if you're getting real authentic information or not. Exactly. For people who aren't genuine.
Just wanted to clarify. But the first half of the podcast, let's talk about you. So you said you had some interesting experiences when you were young. Like, how young was the first one and what was it?
Yeah. So I would say one of my first experiences, at least a big one, I've had a lot of experiences where I would know things before they would happen, or I would have little experiences where I'd hear things. But the biggest experience that really kind of started or kickstarted my journey as a medium, my grandfather died when I was, and I was incredibly close with him. I was his only granddaughter. And the day after he died, he came to me, and he basically came to me, let me know, you know, I've passed, but I wanted to come and see you one last time. I wanted to tell you. And he also told me, I'm going to go see your mom too. I'm going to talk to her. And the thing that really was the evidence for me is that next morning, my mom came to me and she said, you know, your grandfather, my dad, came to me and he said he was coming to you as well. So we were both able to like authenticate that experience because he told us both, like, I'm going to come see both of you. And we were able to come together and verify that for one another. From there, because I was very curious, I was like, okay, is this just because my grandfather really, he came through? Like, am I able to do this with other people? So I started working really hard.
How old were you?
I was 10. So I was 10 years old. And, you know, back then, the internet is not what it is today. There wasn't all of these workshops or courses or things that you could do. So I really didn't have a lot of guidance. It was really me sitting in my room by myself, like just trying to bring energy to myself. I didn't know what I was doing. But there were times when I was a focus that I started making other connections. And they were usually connected to people that I knew. So friends that had people that passed over. I had a childhood friend at 12 years old who passed over and talked to her mother about her, make that connection. I think that the real work started when I wanted to branch out and read for people that I didn't know personally, right? And that's a scary distinction or a scary difference, you know. So luckily, I grew up around a place called Casadega Spiritualist Camp. It's about an hour and a half from me. And it has a lot of mediums. They live in this little city, and they have spiritualists like church there that they meet every Sunday. They also have workshops and courses and mediums that you can go see and speak to. So once I started getting old enough and I started working around 15 or 16, I'd spend my money and get readings, and I would spend half of the reading asking them how they became mediums and how I could become a medium myself. So I went about it in a roundabout way because I didn't know really any other way to do it. And so I was a frequent visitor there, and I really started learning and taking workshops and all of that. And so I started strangers in these workshops, my crafter talent or whatever you want to call it from there. So that's one of the reasons I started the podcast, because I felt like my journey to this was really, you know, up and down. I didn't really know where I was going or what to do next or who to reach out to or what resources were available to me. So starting the podcast and bringing on mediums and people who study mediumship and all of that, I'm hoping to make that path more clear for other people. And I've learned a lot just starting from there. So that's really kind of my journey, especially when I started incorporating some of those workshops, had a lot of visitations and connections. And so now it's something that I am really going after professional, which is a scary step, but I think that it's a gift. And I think that if I can do this and bring peace to people who've lost loved ones.
So since you offer a lot of advice to people who are mediums, what would you say? I'm just going to explain something from my own life that happened one time, or maybe like two times. I got accurate information when I was doing these kind of like just exercises or workshops. I cover the details in my book and other podcast episodes. I won't go into all the details here. 99% of the time, I can't do it. But there are times where also in classes, I'm told, okay, go give somebody a medium reading and logical information pops into my head. Like, oh, this 60-year-old woman's lost a grandmother. And then I'm told it's accurate. But if I was to be in a believy culture and was a believy person myself, I could see how I would think I was a medium, especially if giving, as I said, logical information that I could guess about people's popping into my head. And I'm saying it because I'm doing the assignment. How would someone know if they're actually a medium versus just sharing logical information?
You know, even as a medium that is authentic and does get information that we would have no other way of knowing, there is a logical step to it as well. It makes it a very fine line, right? So if I'm getting somebody coming in and I know that it's a woman and they passed when they were older and there's this feeling of love or whatever, I could say those things, but logic also comes in, right? Like, oh, well, this must be a grandmother because, you know, X, Y, and Z. So even as a medium or as a psychic, you use that logic. It's a very human thing to do, right? I think that our job as mediums is to go a step further. And I think that this is really important when you're practicing or you're trying to hone your talent. I've talked to mediums who will very specifically spend a lot of time trying to learn addresses, right? So say they do these readings and people come in and they really work on, give me an address, give me a street name or something from the spirit that's coming through, because that's something that you're not just gonna know. So I think it's our job to find those details that's outside of logic or outside of the bounds of just reason, right? Us getting an address right, or maybe even a favorite song or something like that, is like one in I don't even know how many million for us to get something like that right. So I think if you're going to a psychic or a medium who is really talented and is really, really trying to do their job well, they're going to give you that kind of information. And you need to ask those things to spirit. If you have spirit coming forward to you, yes, you can deduce that that might be a grandmother. And yeah, it could be your psychic or your mediumship abilities that's bringing that to you. But that's our job, is to give evidence of consciousness after death. And we need to make it where it's unequivocal, right? We need to make it a fact. So that's why I think that when you're going to a reading, no matter if you're a believer or not, even mediums should be skeptics. Mediums should be skeptics. Sitters should be skeptics. That should be a baseline of how we approach these things. And if you're a medium yourself, you have to work on that. Find a song, you know, find a pet, like, you know, or, you know, describe their favorite pet, or maybe a vacation that they really loved or went to, or an actual birthday, or something that is very, very specific. So there is a fine line, right? How do you know if it's you being psychic or being a medium or not? Go the extra step. So that's how you really know. So if you have a spirit coming to you and you say, okay, I think this is a grandma, focus on the next thing. Okay. What's your favorite song? So play me a song. If you're one of the mediums that really has auditory, you know, you're hearing things, ask for something like a song. If you see things, say, show me what your house looked like. What color was your house when you passed? Or go the extra step.
And when I did those readings in class, just thinking of stuff popping in my head, I never got anything that specific at all. It was just very logical things I could guess if I was told to. So that's really, really good advice, both for people who want to be, who are mediums and want to refine their craft, people who wonder if they're mediums or not, and people getting readings. How do you get your information? What does it feel like, or the experience?
So I'm a very, I guess you could say, physical medium. I feel a lot. So like, for example, one of my recent readings was from somebody who had taken their own life, and I could feel immense pressure in my head and like a very strong, like, ringing in my ears. So I could feel that. Or if I had, you know, a child that would come to me, a spirit, they would hold my hand like a child would. I feel things very, very vividly. And I also see things. So I'm shown a lot. And that's one of the biggest ways that I get information. So usually it's more common for me to start with a feeling. So if my chest hurts, I feel like, okay, heart problems, lung problems, something like that. And that's, I think, the easiest way for spirit to come to me, because everything to me is energy. Spirit comes to you the path of least resistance. So I think it's easiest to get to me that way. But from there, if I want to get those extra details, if I want to get that evidence, I have to very intentionally ask them to show me something. So if I have, you know, pain in my chest or like a pressure in my chest, I think logically, because that's part of it, must be a heart attack or something. And then I'll ask, can you show me where this happened? Or, you know, can you show me what your doctor looked like that helped you? Or that's how I go the extra step. And that's really what I had to develop in myself, because at first it didn't always come very naturally to me. I would see little blips of things here and there, one little scene here, one little scene there. I have to very intentionally work to get the details and get down to the nitty gritty, because I think I'm just a very tactile person in general. And that's why I feel like that's how I get my messages, at least in the beginning, until I work with that spirit.
So how would you develop that in yourself? Because I think there's a lot of misconceptions, and in some cases, this is, I'm sure, true as well. But when I first started, even thought of mediumship and began to want to investigate it, I pictured it where it's just, you can do it or you can't. And the information just pops into your head. And I was really surprised to learn it was something people could develop or study or improve upon. So how would someone even do that?
Right. Yeah. That was something that I learned as well that was surprising to me. It's just like if you have a propensity to be good at music or good at art, you might be born with like a talent where it's easier for you to develop it than other people, but it still requires work. It requires you really working through those things. So the way that I worked on it is, I think you really have to understand how your specific talent works. I realized that very physical, I knew that that was the easiest way for me. So understanding yourself and how your gift works first is really, really important. There are things like exercises or like workshops where people will teach you certain things, whether that's meditation or visualization, which I think is important, but mediumship is very experiential. To me, And I know this is a stumbling block for a lot of novice mediums because they're afraid of being wrong. You have to just do it. And that's why being in a safe space and workshops or with friends and family or people that you trust that they're not expecting you to be 100% perfect is a great place to start, right? That way you have that safe space or that freedom to be wrong and then go back to the drawing board and you're not asking people for money right away. There's no pressure. So I definitely say you got to just jump in and do it. But also there are certain things that I found really helpful. One exercise that I read, I learned from somebody is you have to really be the medium. You have to be that meeting place between spirit and this other person. So if your brain is going 100 miles a minute and you're straining and you're trying so hard to get the message, your brain is full of yourself. Messages cannot come through. So this is where something like meditation does come into play. If you can quiet down your brain, if you can leave space for messages, it comes a lot easier. So one of the exercises that I learned is physically have a blank piece of paper, right? Nothing on it, like printer paper, whatever. Focus on it. And the reason that blank piece of paper works really well is because there's only so many things you can think about it. It's square, it's white, it's whatever. You can't really read much into it. Just stare at it, look at it, clear your mind. And that allows visualizations or whatever you want to come into your mind. So I think it's really hard for someone like me because I talk a lot and I think a lot. And it was a big learning curve. It really, really was. But there are lots of exercises like that one, and everybody finds something different that works best for them. That worked wonderful for me because it was something I could hold in my hands. Like I said, I'm a very tactile person to help me clear my mind. And then other people have different ways of going about it, whether they want to do the whole chakra meditation from start to finish, whatever. I don't like to do all of that. I feel like it takes a lot of time and a lot of energy to getting messages. But it's, again, experiential. You try these exercises, you figure out what works best for you. And then once you get to the point where you can clear your mind and you start getting those messages, then once you have that, you can go further by asking questions. So if you get a message, you want to get more detail on that. Then you can ask, tell me more about that. Give me more detail. What color was it? What did you hear? What was your experience like? Blah, 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 blah. That's very important. And if you're a visual medium, like you see things in your mind, visualization exercises, I think, are also very important because the more vivid and detailed you can see things in your mind, the more details you're going to be able to see during a reading and then give that also to your sitter, which is where you get that evidence, right? The devil's in the details. So it is a lot of work. It takes years. It takes years and years to be the kind of medium who can have 3 or 4 readings in a day and reliably give messages, right? Because it can be draining. So if you know Sally's coming at 3 p.m. on Saturday and I have to be ready to go and I have to be able to do it, it takes years to get to that point because a lot of times when you have this particular talent, things just come to you and you can't control when or how or whatever. So you kind of have to tame that in yourself.
Why do you think mediums get some information wrong? I know I've had people who are skeptics concluded that there is no afterlife or all mediums are fake. They say that if you're a medium, let's say you're talking to my father, that you should hear him say, I am Liz's father. She grew up here. She went to this school. This is one of our favorite memories. And these are the names and breeds of the animals we all had, for example. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, if I died and my consciousness still survived and I spoke to a medium, that's what I would do. So it doesn't seem to actually work that perfectly from what I understand.
Right. So why isn't it just as cut and dry as like, okay, here you go. This is everything that you need to know. I really believe that, first of all, it's not a perfect sort of system, right? So all mediums, they kind of have a different way that they connect with spirit and all of that. One of the things that I really heard a very experienced medium say is that on the other side, spirits as well have to learn how to communicate this way too. So we're learning how to connect and communicate with them from our side, and they're learning how to work that and do that from their side as well, because they're still humans. They've crossed over, they've died, but they are very much human-like. So they need to find, like I said, the path of least resistance to reaching out to us. I think that just like over here, there's people who are a lot better at it. I think that there are spirits that are also better at it. You can have multiple mediums go into an area and try to read like a home or something like that. And one medium will be getting a bunch of stuff and maybe another one won't. That's because it's easier for the spirit to communicate with this medium who connects in a different way than with the other medium. I think that's why it's important to always be working on yourself, right? So I started out with just touch and I worked on visualization. I'm working now on auditory so I can hear. You have to keep adding these different senses to your practice or your talent to make it easier to get those kind of messages, to be able to just have that clear-cut line of communication. But I think what happens to some mediums is that, you know, they start getting messages and then they continue to read the same way for their entire lives instead of saying, hey, I want to make this clearer. So let's work on strategies to get that kind of information. There are some people, I think they're more rare, who can get really, really detailed stuff, right? And then there's a lot of mediums where it does seem a lot more cloudy, right? You might be able to get some information, but not all of it. One of the things that I heard, and I've actually started incorporating myself, is taking the mysticism or the mystery out of mediumship. I think that there's been this idea since the days that spiritualism got really big, you know, in like the 1900s, 1920s or whatever, that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of not wanting to explain how it works, that you have to do this huge, like, I don't know, ritual before you can talk to a spirit. And what I'm seeing now, which I think is really great, is people kind of dressing that down a lot. My goal is to talk to a spirit just like I would talk to anybody, talk to you, right? You have people who are jumping in and trying to talk to spirit and trying to talk to people that have crossed over. And they're immediately like, how did you die? Tell me this, tell me that. Instead of introducing yourself to spirit, they're human, right? You want to talk to them like they're human. I wouldn't come up to you randomly and be like, tell me your address that you lived here in, you know, 1986, blah, 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 blah. I think a lot of what makes a great medium is somebody who can speak to that spirit like a normal human. And I think that the connection that you create with people that have crossed over that way is a lot purer and a lot cleaner. And you get that sort of information a lot more reliably. So I think it's just this idea that, I don't know, it's akin to like witchcraft or something where we have to light incense and do this whole meditation. And then we're going to jump in and ask this very specific question or whatever. And if you look at it from the other side, if you're a human being and you've crossed over, there's this idea that they know everything and that they're perfectly attuned to the other side. And they, you know, if they wanted to reach out to you and tell you all of that, then they would. But I think that there's a learning curve from the other side as well. And if you approach them like humans, then you can have a conversation like humans have conversations, which I think improves the readings a lot. You might not be able to get like a written statement, like a press release from them saying, I am Arthur, whatever, whatever, married to this person with these, like they're reading their obituary to you or something, right? But I do think that there's a learning curve from the other side as well. And I think that if you hone the way that you reach out to them, you get a lot better information. Does that make sense?
It does. But I also want to ask, you said you try to talk to them like normal people. They never speak back. You would never hear from them as clearly as our conversation is right now, correct?
Well, yes and no. I think that you can definitely have sort of a back and forth, but I think that it's more about trying to bring the senses together, right? I don't think it's like calling somebody on a telephone and saying, hey, it's nice to meet you. I'm a medium, blah, blah, blah. It's definitely more like, let me show you this, or I'm going to have you feel this, or I'm going to tell you something. It's a lot, you know, you kind of have to put things together, right? So if I'm putting together a phrase that you've said and something that you've shown me, I can put that together and make that image make sense, right? And then I confirm with the person who's sitting with me. And again, I think it's just because we don't have a telephone to the other side. I think that also, you know, we're imperfect in our the way that we do it. We're trying to make ourselves transparent to get these messages through. And I think, like I said, I think that it's not as easy for them on their side as well. I think it's when you come together and try to get as clear information as you can and ask the right questions. It's almost like, what's a good example that I could give? If you're like in a foreign country a little bit, right? And you guys don't know each other's language and you're specifically asking about where a building is, you can point to things, you can kind of give examples, you can act it out, you can, you know, I remember specifically when I was in Rome, and because I eat kosher, I couldn't have pork. So I was trying to ask if the sandwich had pork in it. So I oinked like a pig. I was like, does this have oink, oink, oink? And they're like, oh, no, no, no. It's very similar to that, right? Like you're meeting them and kind of the you're meeting them halfway, right? So I think that has a lot to do with it. It's putting together the different pieces and making the story. But it is almost like you're speaking different languages. You're both human, but you have to kind of figure it out and put it together.
It definitely seems to be a misconception that it's identical to just talking on the phone or as if the person was sitting next to you. That
Right. Seems
like unrealistic standards for communicating through dimensions.
Sure. I mean, if it were that easy for spirit to come and talk to a medium and say all of that stuff, then none of this would be in question, first of all. And I think they'd be talking to everybody. Why just this? If they're so good at communicating from that side, you wouldn't even have to go to a medium. They'd figure out how to talk to everyone. But I don't think it's that simple. And I think that, you know, because of that, you have to have people like mediums who spend years and years and years trying to figure it out and trying to hone their skills and their talents to be able to communicate better for the sitter and for the spirits on the earth. I think it's a labor of love. It's not quite as clear as people think. And it goes back to like what you were saying. You think you either have it or you don't, but then you learn, oh, it's actually a lot of work. It's like, so, you know, we play charades a lot. We have to, we're the best charades players.
I remember reading a line early on that it's a lot more like playing charades than just talking on the phone. And I was like, that makes sense.
Yes.
Of all time, what would you say is the biggest what the fuck, how did I know that most evidential experience you've had in your life as a medium?
Yeah. So it was really interesting. I was actually on a flight. I was coming back from Israel, and this was actually right before COVID a couple of years ago. And I was sitting next to somebody for like, you know, hours and hours and hours. And when I first sat down next to them, I got this feeling that there was somebody who had to talk to this person. And it was a woman and it was a young woman. So I didn't know like if it was a sister or like a younger spouse or something, somebody that had passed over. And, you know, you're on an airplane and people are trying to mind their own business. And I'm not really an airplane talker. I don't really talk to the people next to me on flights, especially if it's a long flight, because that could be awkward. But they were a Hasidic Jewish person. And it's also uncomfortable the way that they kind of feel about, you know, interaction with women that you're not married to or related to. So it didn't really feel very appropriate either. And it just kept getting more and more urgent as like the hours went by. And then I got a chance because the flight attendant came around and was handing out snacks and drinks. And, you know, he, you know, handed stuff to me and we talked for a second. And I was like, all right, well, if I'm going to do it, it's got to be now. And I don't advocate for reading for unsuspecting people. I do feel like that can be very emotionally upsetting if somebody is not in the right frame of mind. And I think that the reason that I did do this is because it felt so urgent. I might not do it again if it ever happened to me, because I hadn't really gone through the learning of the ethics at that point either. I learned that, you know, recently doing like my podcast, because I, you know, there's not really that solid foundation of learning these things until you start. So I looked at him and I said, can I just ask you a question? And he was like, yeah, what is it? And I said, did you recently lose somebody that was, you know, a woman? And like she gave me an age, 23. She gave me what color her hair and her eyes were, where she lived. It was New York, different things like that. And he's like, that's where I'm going right now. My sister passed in New York and I'm going to her funeral right now. And it was funny because I was expecting him to, because he's religious, to not be accepting of it, but he very much was. And to me, the most important part for me, because this was new to me, is that he told me to ask her questions. And I was able to take those questions and ask her and then relay the response. So it wasn't just me saying this, 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 and this, and this, and then just like rapid fire throwing things at him. I was able to facilitate a conversation between him and his sister, asking his questions and answering, you know, for her to him. And it was absolutely magical. And I was so happy that I was able to do that for somebody, because he had moved to Israel. He'd lived there for years. He hadn't seen her since they were like teenagers. He felt very bad because he didn't get to say, you know, goodbye to her or see her since, you know, she had gotten married and all of this other stuff. And I was able to give them that last conversation. And to me, that was everything. That's when I knew, when I had that experience, I can't not do this, because that was, for me, special. And for him, something that otherwise he would never have that closure. He would never have that last conversation. He would never be able to have that in his life. So we've stayed in contact now, and it's wonderful. I made a very special connection, and I've had a lot of like crazy things where I know things and it's crazy. Like there's no other way you would know it. And it kind of freaks people out a little bit. But to me, the reason this particular experience was special was because, like I said, I facilitated a conversation. It wasn't just me talking at somebody. I was facilitating that connection between two people on two different planes of existence. So that's why that is my favorite experience.
That's a really special story.
Yeah.
That must have meant the world to him, to his sister, given that consciousness survives.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had a very close relationship when they were younger children, because they were the youngest in Hasidic families, they'll have like 13 children, right? So they were the youngest of all of the siblings. So they were very, very close. And they had a lot of like really great experiences when they were younger. And, you know, they regretted kind of, you know, going apart as they got older, because they had different things going on in their lives. And I very much, as the medium, got to feel that very pure feeling of young siblings like bonding. I don't know. I felt them like as children, remembering what it was like when they would play together or like experience things together. So it was crazy. And so that kind of started the whole me really, really buckling down and really wanting to do this and thinking of the podcast and getting a mentor and doing all of that. So that's what we really strive for in this, you know, in this world, in this industry, whatever you want to call it, that's what we really want to. It's what we should do if we have the right motivations, right? It shouldn't be, I want to be able to have somebody sit for me and I blow their mind and look how great I am. I know all of these things. For, I think, mediums who are really in this for good reasons, it is about being able to make those connections, right? It's about being able to facilitate that.
There's a difference between psychic information and medium information.
Yes, absolutely. This gets misconstrued a lot. So psychic, if you're psychic, you know things that are happening around that person present day, right? Like the energies that are surrounding somebody, you'll be able to tell them things about themselves and their situation and give advice, that sort of thing. Mediumship is very specific to being able to connect with those who have crossed over, passed over, and facilitate that sort of discussion, right? You can be psychic without being a medium, but you can't be a medium without also being a psychic. So one thing too is trying to differentiate between a psychic reading and a mediumship reading. And very interestingly, I just spoke with a medium from the UK, and she let me know that there's a difference between the people in the UK and the people in the US. A lot of people in the US will come for a reading and they will really want a psychic reading. They'll want advice on their career or what they should do about a relationship or something like that. And she said, she gave like, I figure like, oh, it's like, you know, more than like 40% of the people who come to me in the US, they want psychic stuff too. In the UK, it's the opposite. Most people want the mediumship readings, the psychic, the readings they're not too interested in. And I really think that it has to do with the fact that in the UK, they have colleges for mediums. They have all of these spiritualist churches. It's much more like widely known there. But you have to be able to parse through that as a medium yourself. What is a psychic? What are you getting psychically? And what are you getting as a medium? And what's the difference? For me, it was a learning curve. Like when I started going to these workshops and working with my mentor, I would say things and she would be like, that's psychic. That's not medium. Like, let's focus more. But it can also be a tool for a medium, right? So if you're trying to relay a message from a spirit, right? And maybe they are motherly or fatherly or something like that. Sometimes they want to give advice to the person that's sitting, right? So they'll say, hey, I don't like the boyfriend that you're with right now or something, or I do really like them. I can use like psychic energy and psychic understanding to help make that make sense, right? They're saying that they don't really like your boyfriend or blah, 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 or whatever. And then I can use the psychic energies to be like, hey, maybe it's has to do with them not being focused in their career because I'm kind of getting the feeling that they don't have their life together, blah, 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 blah. And then that becomes a little bit of a mixture of a reading, right? Usually what I'll do and a lot of mediums will do is ask kind of what the motivations for you coming are. Like, hey, I can give psychic readings and I can also give mediumship readings. I'll let them know the difference between the two before the reading. And a lot of times they'll just be like, whatever comes through, either or, you know, and that's fine. We could totally do that. But I think it's important when you go for a reading to understand the difference and to know what it is that you're really wanting to hear about, right? So, and then that's a lot, something that a lot of people don't really realize. And I think mediums who don't have maybe a lot of experience will end up giving you a psychic reading and not a mediumship reading. So, and I also believe psychic readings are much easier to fake, honestly, because usually if people have access to your social media or something like that, what's going on in your life, what you're surrounded by in that moment is reflected in your pictures and your posts and all of that. So I think those things are, quite frankly, easier for people to be less authentic about. Mediumship readings, I think that there's another layer to that where you have to bring the correct evidence. So that's just something to keep in mind as well.
Now, how do you tell the difference when you're giving a medium reading, a psychic reading?
So for me, it wasn't very obvious at first, but now it definitely is, right? Because you have a spirit sitting with you. You're very focused, you know, in on that energy. And because you're kind of clearing out your mind and making room for those messages, there shouldn't be much room for you to be working psychically. It should really, you being that you're the telephone, right? You're the one in the middle. But also, if you're being very specific about the questions that you're asking, if you're being very specific about the information that you're trying to bring forward to give evidence of consciousness after death, you wouldn't be getting psychic, picked up on psychic things, right? So like if I have your grandfather here, and I specifically want to give you evidence of like, what's their favorite song or something like that, I'll focus on that. And after you've worked for a while, you'll feel the difference between the way that it feels when it's coming across your mind, right? So you'll know when it's coming from outside of yourself and when it's coming from your own intuition. And again, I think it comes down to being very experiential and learning the difference between those things. And I think that's why it's important to have people around you that you trust or workshops that you can go to where you can work out those kinks, because they can trip you up for sure.
So now let's shift how to protect your evidence. I will first start with just something that I did hear. And a medium I know and trust said he was disgusted because he was watching a medium, a proclaimed medium, who was reading this woman, and she was on Zoom, and she had all this woman's social media open in a tab and was just reading this woman's stuff from her social media, stuff from her, I guess it was Facebook, he said. And this woman thought she was getting this kick-ass reading, and it was so fake.
Especially since COVID started, a lot of mediumship has gone online through Zoom. And on one hand, it's been wonderful because people have access to really great experienced psychics that otherwise they wouldn't. Like, you're out in the middle of Ohio and there's a great psychic in New York. There'd be no other way that you can get a reading from that person unless you had some sort of digital medium. But it's also created issues like you're just saying. The internet in general has made it much easier for people to honestly just be charlatans. So working in marketing has given me a pretty good insight into the kind of information that you can get out of people. One of the biggest things that you try to do as a marketer when you're trying to sell to people is understand your audience and who you're trying to target. That means where you're going to find them. What are they looking at and reading? What do you know about their situation with themselves and their business? What is their names and their contact information? All of this. And there are tools that, you know, my company pays thousands and thousands of dollars for every month to try to get this information. Some of it is like intent data stuff. Like, there's a product called Sixth Sense that really kind of gives insight into what people are doing and all of that. But knowing that these things exist and working with them extensively every day also tells me what their limitations are.
Hi, can I ask all of you listening a favor? Would you mind rating and reviewing my book, WTF Just Happened? A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife on Amazon? Authors depend so much on ratings. They are crucial to the algorithm and Amazon making sure this book is seen. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. Thank you.
I would love to be able to know everything about everybody in my audience. It would make my job a lot easier. Matter of fact, they probably might not even need me, which wouldn't work.
Not in a way that you would cheat as a medium, but in a way that you'd be able to market significantly better when you're doing marketing for your marketing job, not...
Exactly. Yes, yes. For my marketing job, it would make my job so much easier to be able to do that. However, there are a lot of things that you cannot get. Some of it has to do with privacy laws on the internet and the sort of things that we're allowed to get from people. A lot of it we're not allowed to get without permission. And a lot of it is also just what we have access to from the outside. So I think that there are definitely things that you could do to protect yourself before reading.
What can you not get and what you can? Sorry. Yeah. What can you and what can you not? Whichever order you want to do.
So some of the stuff that we can get is I can tell if I've had somebody visit my website or interact with social stuff that I have online. I can get information like, what other websites are they maybe looking at? Where have they gone since they left my website? Have they returned to my website? Like, what have they clicked on? That sort of thing. We can, depending, sometimes get phone numbers, emails, intent, they call it intent data. So there are algorithms and there's AI that will tell you this person visited these sites, have done these actions, blah, blah, blah. So we think it's probable that they're in the market for your product, or that they would really love, say if they like photography, they would really love any photography event, or maybe they're a photographer, maybe they're just like a hobby photographer, those sorts of things, like about what you like and what you would like to see more of. I mean, you even see that in like streaming services like Netflix, like we think you'd like these shows. And that's a very basic version of it. So we can kind of get intent, right? We can kind of get a sense of maybe who you are as a person, like maybe personality wise, or what your hobbies are, what you spend your days doing. What we can't get is information like, unless you've gone to my specific website and bought a camera, and I can see that you bought that camera from my website, we can't tell what kind of cameras you have. We can't tell what kind of photo shoots you've been on. We can't tell if you have the intention of opening your own photography shop. You know, we have ideas of things. We don't have concrete evidence. It's just the likelihood that you might like or do these things is there. But that's why, going back to what I was saying before, you have to be specific. You have to be detailed. So if you're going to be a sitter, right? And first of all, just so you know, this kind of software that can give you this sort of information, I'm talking like $12,000 a month. It's expensive. Most of your regular mediums and every day, they cannot afford this. You have to be trained on it. And it usually takes months to be able to train on it, to use that very specifically, that sort of thing. But there are easier ways for individuals to really find things out about you. I mean, just think of like the internet stalker sort of idea, right? Like your boyfriend broke up with you and you want to know who his new girlfriend is. What can you find out?
I would never do that. Ever done anything like that.
Of course not. There's plausible deniability. You can't prove that I've done that. Unless I've liked your picture from 6 months ago on accident. But
oh God, that's the worst when you're like looking at like,
and then you try to unsee it, right? But it's already there.
And you're like, oh God.
It's already sending. But that's a good mind frame to put yourself in before you go for a sitting, right? What if you had a jealous ex-boyfriend who wants to find stuff out about you and who you're dating now? What would you do? You'd make sure your profile is on private. Right? If you didn't want somebody to find you, you might change your name a little bit. Maybe you'd put like your initial and then you really go by your middle name. Like, right? Like I've had my profiles go by, you know, Danny Hadley, because Danielle's my middle name. And sometimes that's what I go off of. You would make sure those things were in place. And that's a very simple, easy way that you can do that. Another thing is to make sure that you're not being taken advantage of, and in a perfect world, this wouldn't happen anyway, but Google yourself. Do a reverse search, right? So you have like your white hat hackers that are, you know, hacking for the good. Become the stalker yourself. Go and look at what you can find out about yourself online and what you can find out about your family and people connected to you, because you don't have to just worry about yourself. Think about, they want to know more about your family too, because that might come up in the reading. Just take a look. I'm not saying you have to take all of these precautions. You don't have to do, you know, all of this extra stuff, but go in knowing that there are things that are available about you. And unless you get something evidential outside of what you can find about yourself and your family on the internet, and you can, I'm not saying challenge a medium as in being aggressive, but you can request further detail. You don't have to just say, okay, thank you, you know, and then leave confused and wondering if it's a true reading or not. I would welcome somebody that's sitting for me to ask for more detail. Like, okay, yeah, but can you tell me a little bit more? Like, can you tell me, you know, maybe about some experiences we had together or something like that? And if your medium is somebody who's working on getting more detail and who really works on their talent, that should not in any way be offensive to them. But I would go in with the knowledge of what can be found out about you before you go in, if you're, you know, you're skeptical. Also, this is something that you mentioned to me too, give a fake name. You don't have to give your real name. That's not something you have to do at all. And one thing that I've noticed from very good mediums is a lot of times they don't even know your name or who you are before going into a reading. They will have like an assistant or some automated thing on their calendar or whatever that will make those appointments for them. So I spoke to a medium recently who's very experienced. She's wonderful. She does not get the names or anything from people. A lot of times, what especially people who aren't very skeptical, what they'll do is if you call to set up a reading, they'll be like, yeah, I'm calling to set up a reading. I want to speak to my mother who's passed. She passed a couple years ago and blah, blah. You know, they'll give all of that in the beginning. And here's the thing. Mediums, real true mediums, they don't like that. Because number one, you're putting preconceived notions and biases in their mind from the beginning, right? So say if you're giving a reading and somebody's told you they're wanting to talk to their mother that's passed, blah, 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 and you have a female spirit come to you, you have a bias in your mind. So you might automatically think this must be her mother. So then when you start giving evidence, oh, she's got blonde hair, she's this, she's that. And for some reason, it's not right. Well, it might be because the female spirit that came to you is actually her great aunt and not her mom at all. And you're reading the great aunt perfectly fine. But because you have the preconceived notion that it's going to be her mother that steps through, you're trying to make a round peg fit in, you know, the square hole sort of thing. So in a perfect world, going into a sitting, I wouldn't know your name. I wouldn't know anything about you. There would be no way for me to Google you. Now, you know, whether or not somebody sets it up that way is, you know, it's up to them. But real genuine mediums, they take precautions themselves on their side to make sure that they're coming in as a blank slate, non-biased.
Okay, so I'm going to go through some of the ways I protected, because very early on, I knew there were some of the quote unquote best mediums. And I thought maybe the best ones had a collaborator in the FBI or CIA or a family member in the CIA. I've since changed my mind, as people know, read my book. Plus, I do think that some mediums got stuff that even a person in the CIA wouldn't know, even if doing a full search. They got memories. They got, you know, stuff that is non-findable. But okay, so let's take, first I'll break down the different types of readings I've gotten. Not types like psychic versus medium, but situations. So let's say a reading. So I disguised all my information. But let's say it's an in-person reading. I've given either a fake name, or sometimes I just use Elizabeth or Liz with a different last name. Sometimes mediums, I've asked if I could pay cash when I got there. Sometimes I've had friends, not family members, friends pay. I used a VPN address when I booked online in case they had tracking software, a different email. If there's a phone number required, I've used a Google Voice number. And is there any technology? Well, first I'll go to the fact that I then went in person. So I wondered a little bit early on, and it's become, that was in 2016 when I began my first medium readings. Technology has since changed. Facial recognition technology. What? And I wondered that in 2016 briefly, but now it's even significantly more prevalent, facial recognition. What do you have to say about that going in person? And maybe they have a little camera and amazing facial recognition technology, and they're getting suddenly linked to my social media, my real name, unless I'm like a triplet or have a doppelganger. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I'll say even the most sophisticated technologies that's available to like the general public, which would be, you know, a corporation or a medium or things like that, is already very imperfect. So we'll pay thousands of dollars for these sorts of functionalities where, like, if you have one data point about somebody and you try to pull in everything else connected to them, right? I would say that, gosh, more than half the time, like if we, maybe we just had a name, right? Or whatever, or title of somebody at a company. There are software that will pull through anything that might be connected to that person. And 50% of the time it is wrong. And then I'd say even another 25% of the time that doesn't, it just can't come back with some things. It might be like, okay, we have this name and we're able to pull this LinkedIn profile and maybe this email, and we're about 75% sure that that's the right email. The LinkedIn could be wrong because there might be two or three people with the same name. So you have to still go, you try to automate this as easy as you can, because in marketing, you're working with thousands of contacts, but you still have to really go in and authenticate things, right? So like me, for example, I'll have an intern who has to go through and click through these things and make sure that they match, which is very, like, very, very intensive, like labor intensive and time intensive.
In your marketing job, not as a medium.
In the marketing job, yes. It's a good, yes. Yeah, thank you for making sure that that's coming across. Yes, in my marketing job. So it's very imperfect technology, first of all, and requires a lot of time and a lot of effort from somebody. So I would say too, if you're setting up a reading or whatever, and you know you're going like the next day, very improbable that they'll be able to really dig up stuff on you, especially facial recognition sort of things. That's very, very expensive. You have some facial recognition stuff that might.
What does expensive mean?
So that would also be like, I'm talking like 10, 15 grand a month sort of thing. And also it wouldn't be as perfect. Like it might be able to tell you maybe what ethnicity the person is, age, maybe those sorts of things. So the points about like demographics, but being able to pinpoint you as an exact person and here's information about them and connections to like social media sites and all of that is not something that we have access to really, or that would be probable. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, maybe one day in the future, it's possible, but
I'll wear a mask, a full ski mask, and I get medium readings.
They'll think you're robbing them. It might not be a great idea. But yeah, that is, you know, and there are physical mediums, not many, but there are like mediums that feel things very physically, and they kind of.
So you mean mediums, when you say physical medium, you mean mediums that feel things physically, not physical mediumship, which is seances and moving objects.
Yes, yes. There are people who will have maybe like a curtain set up. Very rare, because I feel like a lot of mediums feel like, you know, I want to be able to feel their energy, whatever, whatever. But it stops cold reading, where they're really working off of the way you're reacting to things and your facial expressions and your body movements and things like that. So that is something that some mediums will offer. Or if you're a very skeptical kind of person, you can ask. I mean, I would do that for somebody if they really wanted me to. Like I would. But I would say that the probability of somebody having such a sophisticated tech stack to be able to find these very detailed things is very, very highly improbable. Yes, they might be able to figure out, are you married? If you've posted on social media, RIP, my best friend, blah, 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 and you've done all that, then yes, they might be able to do that. But I would absolutely say just make sure your stuff is private. You can hide posts from your timeline specifically before you ever contact a medium or anything like that. And these sort of precautions, they don't take much time and much effort. You're really just kind of seeing what you have about yourself out there. But it's not likely or really probable that they'd have such something so sophisticated where they will know that you went to Australia with your mom when you were 10 years old and you guys pet kangaroo together and something funny happened, right? Like those are the sorts of things that they'd really have to interview your friends and family and things like that to really get that sort of information.
And now regarding private social media, because my personal social media when I first started researching this is private. The certain things have changed since I have launched What the Fuck, where obviously a lot is very public. Although when I go to mediums, I disguise myself so they wouldn't even align me with What the Fuck. If you have private social media, is there technology? Obviously, there's FBI, CIA, police technology that can access it. Is there a type of marketing technology that could access it?
Now, even with like things like law enforcement and stuff like that, a lot of times being able to have access to that private information, they have to petition the social media platform themselves and have to have permission and a viable reason to be able to do that. So even in investigations, it could take weeks or months to be able to get that permission and get that information. So for marketing, definitely not. There are lots of fail-safes in place from like internet providers, Google, social media platforms, and things like that, that would be against the law to break, that would result in huge fines or, you know, even being charged with things and stuff like that. And I know that some people might be thinking about recently what happened with Facebook and the whole court issue about personal data and all of this other stuff. The reason that platforms like Facebook and stuff like that gather that information, it's demographic information. It's for advertisers like me. Like, I'm not evil. Like, I didn't make Facebook do this, first of all. But that's where these platforms make their money, in advertising, in agencies that want to put their ads and put them in front of the right people. But the data, there's such huge data sets, thousands and thousands of points on what kind of posts you've liked or what age you've put on your profile, you know, where you live, all of this kind of stuff. It's very general, but it's helpful for an advertiser like myself to know, like, hey, I have this ad for this line of dresses, and I want my ad to reach women from 18 to 35 who might, you know, be somewhere around the $50,000 to $100,000 salary bracket in just the eastern coast of the United States. So you can be very targeted that way. And that's the information that they're trying to gather on people. That makes people, you know, advertisers and things like that, able to manipulate larger portions of the population. And that's where the moral problem comes from. That if you have all these data sets and you're selling them, it's easier for people to put out like fake news or manipulate you into wanting or buying things, stuff like that. But what it doesn't do is give data sets like, you know, what is your dad's favorite song? Or, you know, what funny thing happened on your parents' anniversary, you know, all of these years ago and stuff like that. So yes, there is ways to find a lot of information, and that's a big, you know, conversation in technology and advertising right now. But if you're getting the right kind of reading where they're giving that very personal, detailed evidence, still not stuff, even with this very expensive technology, that you'll be able to find unless you've specifically posted about the event itself and how you felt about it, or it's connected to other profiles and your profile's not private. Now, another thing that if we're being very, very careful, say your profile is private and you get a friend request from somebody out of the blue, right? Or like that you could tell maybe is like a fake profile, or they're pretending to be somebody that you do know or something very like tactical, like scammer sort of things. They steal your friend's pictures and they create a profile and then they try to add you or whatever. There are people who maybe would go through, jump all of those hoops. It's crazy to me, but just check your friends list as well. So like if your profile is private and you did post about somebody passing or some sort of experience, and perhaps the medium has added you as a friend and you're not 1,000% sure there's somebody that you know, they could be creeping on your profile and finding stuff out. So I'd also say just be very careful about who you add to your network, because that's another way that you could do it.
Some do that. I mean, I have backed up through my own readings where I've hid my information, and the scientists I trust who studied immunes have become my good friends, and the information they got. So many mediums, like also ones who are not my friends or before they were my friends, and the level of information I got was never posted on social media. I just don't post personal stuff very often.
Yeah.
But there was, I believe it was called Operation Peach Pit. Susan Jurbik did a whole, they exposed well-known medium, and I'm not going to name them just because I don't like naming and shaming, but this medium was never mentioned or studied or backed up by any of the scientists. Mm-hmm. And these people made a fake Facebook profile, signed up for the event with it, commented, and it was all fake information. And the medium gave all that information that was on the Facebook profile. Now, this could be an interesting experiment if you're super skeptical, as I was in the beginning. Give a fake name. get together, make a fake profile on Facebook, put it in your signature link when you sign up for the reading, a public Facebook, a public Instagram, put fake information in it and a fake name and tell some friends you're doing this and follow your friends and then put all this in your link to the Medium. If they are giving all the fake information that you have listed, then you know. But if you do that and then you're getting a reading from a Medium and they are giving real information,
yes,
then you know. And also if they're getting wrong information, which was something that also helped me to realize that a good portion of mediums are just not that accurate. A portion are super accurate, but a portion are not dishonest, but sometimes just don't get accurate information. Right. So that helped me trust at least intentional honesty, because if they're also getting wrong information, but it's not the information they could have clicked, then there you go.
That is very interesting. That would be cool to go through with that experiment, and then you come back on your podcast and tell us what happens and what you came up with. That would be so interesting to me. And I think that you're right. I think that's another thing to keep in mind too, that sometimes if you go and you have a reading that you would consider a bad reading, that a lot of times it's not intentional, that people might have really good intentions and they really want to do this for you and they want to bring you that sort of comfort and closure, but they're just not getting it, right? I think that I've seen that a lot, especially working in workshops with people who are interested in becoming mediums. It's also very, you know, discouraging and upsetting for them as well. Nobody wants to go and have a reading and then not be able to help anybody at all. And that's something that for mediums that are on the path to try to be like real certified mediums, that's why I like to say it takes years. It takes a long time. You know, you'll have people who will take one workshop and then go throw up a website and say they're mediums now. And yeah, maybe a lot of times they have real experiences and they're really getting information. But if you're jumping the gun and you're not doing the work, then you're going to be unintentionally disingenuous, right? Because like I said, I was getting a lot of experiences, but I knew that I couldn't replicate this on a daily basis over and over and over again, multiple times a day. And that's why I wouldn't do professional readings, because you have to know your level of skill. If Sally's coming at 3 p.m. on Saturday, I better be on my game. And if I don't feel like I can do that in a repeatable, you know, way that's really helping people, I think that that's another ethics and moral thing that any medium or person that has this talent is thinking about, that they should really assess themselves very honestly before deciding to go into this professionally. You know, sometimes we want something so bad that we try to force it before we're ready.
Now, let's say I take all those precautions and it's a phone reading, because I don't, not Zoom, but a phone reading. Voice recognition technology. Do you know anything about that and how likely that is?
Yeah. So voice recognition technology, the way that that would work is that they would need previous samples of your voice to be able to authenticate that and figure out who you are. So if this is the first time you've really talked on the phone, or you haven't, you know, you did talk on the phone, but you only talked for 3 minutes to set up the meeting, the schedule, that's not enough information for them to be able to identify you. So it's kind of like when they're doing forensics with like signatures or handwriting, they have to have a certain amount of samples to say definitively that this is this person's handwriting. And there's a lot of holes in that just to begin with. Same thing with the voice. There has to be a lot of samples of your voice to be able to compare for voice recognition to work. So maybe if you're like a YouTube person and you have hundreds of videos online or something and they can pull that and use that for voice recognition, but then again, they already have your YouTube channel, right? So it's not really probable or would really work in a repeatable way anyway.
It's interesting. It's almost a test now that my book and podcast are out. What are people getting? And what's interesting is that they are getting information that they could not get through Google searches. Still, not all, but I mean, of the ones the ones that have not gotten good information, I still haven't concluded any of these ones are cheating. There's only three ones I've had through my whole life so far, my whole research, that I've concluded are cheating. One I cover in my book, Physical Medium. One I don't think Googled, but was doing very clear, cold, hot reading and kind of manipulative stuff. And then another was like a storefront that was doing very typical cold reading. I mean, it was all pretty unsophisticated.
I feel like the amount of time and energy put into this technology or anything like that, it really wouldn't, there'd be no ROI. There'd be no real, like, you maybe you pay a couple $100 for a reading, but if they're putting 10 hours of work into figuring out who you are, it doesn't make much sense on the other end of it, you know?
It seems like even if they had an FBI connection, to get the level of information needed to do a really good reading for someone like me who had skeptically hidden their information, it would be going to social media companies. And it would be a level, it'd be doable to get all this information if the FBI is trying to find a profile on a potential serial killer, right, or terrorist. But the amount of money and effort over, let's say a medium has even, let's say they just have a small amount of readings, like 10 readings a month. Let's say they have a year long wait list, the way some of the mediums do, they still could not get that level of information.
Right.
Because even with an FBI contact, because the FBI contact would not be able to repeatedly go to this social media and repeatedly get,
you know, you have three or four people a day or even 10 readings a week or something, thinking about repeating that many times as well to be consistent. I mean, if anybody listening is like a true crime fan, you can even just watch some of those documentaries where people have literally been murdered and they still can't get cell phone records, or they still can't, you know, it's taking forever to get information from Facebook or whatever. So to think about, you know, somebody who is a medium and they have their own business doing readings, it wouldn't pan out. It wouldn't make sense that way. Now, I think that the most common ways of quote unquote cheating are kind of what we covered, the hot and cold reading. People who learn to read people's, you know, facial expressions and body movements, things like that. Very charismatic people who can pull things out of you. And that's just very much like your, like, predator behavior, right? Like, you know, this person is vulnerable. You're saying and doing all of the right things to pull out the information that you need. That's psychologically sophisticated. If there are people that are very good at that naturally, right? But I think that that's probably the most common is if you go into a reading and you're sitting for a medium, be aware of what you're giving away, right? You don't need to be hostile and go in and be, you know, like totally uncooperative or whatever, but don't give away information to say yes or no answers, right? A lot of times what will happen is the medium will ask you a question. And then you'd be like, no, actually, my mom is this. So you're giving them information. You're not just saying yes or no. So I think really going in with the right mindset and really making sure that you're kind of protecting that information and making the medium do what they're supposed to be doing, work for it. They're working for that information, right? I think that that's one of the most important things to keep in mind.
And record it so you can go back and listen.
Yes.
You can walk away remembering something better than it was, then you're like, oh, I did say that. Or if you're super skeptical like me, I would remember a medium got something amazing like a name and I'm like, oh, I probably said it somehow. And then I'd listen and say, oh, I didn't. Oh my God.
When you're in that moment, it's true. You are vulnerable, right? Especially if you're going in and you've lost somebody and maybe you're nervous or whatever. Recording it is actually a really, really great idea. And I mean, you'll have mediums and things like that, that, you know, even the Long Island medium on TV, she records all the sessions and gives the people the tape afterwards. So any medium worth their salt will not have a problem with you doing that. If you're doing a Zoom call, ask if you can record the Zoom call and if you can have that. There really should be no reason that a medium will tell you no. And if they come up with some reason, I would be suspicious of that, because they are, you know, working as a medium. They're technically a public figure. You're paying for the reading. So if you're paying for it, you should be able to own those moments recorded or whatever. And if it just say, you know, I won't use it for any commercial purposes, I just for myself, and then really going back over it and seeing what you did. And then if you want to get another reading from there and you felt like you did give some stuff away, it helps you really be able to go into the next reading more prepared and not giving things away. So yeah, I think that's wonderful advice. Honestly, if I start giving professional readings, that would be something that I would just make like be normal in every reading. Like, hey, this is recorded and I'll give it to you. I think that that's a wonderful way from the other side of the aisle for mediums to gain trust as well, because that's important, right? I think a good medium will already do some of these steps for you to make you feel more comfortable and to show that trust. So I would say if a medium does something like that, then that's a green flag, right? You talk about red flags a lot, but sometimes it's good to look for green flags too. Like, are they recording it? Are they doing other things that are, you know, are they giving you options on how you'd like the reading? Or, you know, do they tell you, like, don't tell me anything? Or just say yes or no? Are they're prompting you to not give away everything? Do they have an assistant take your information so the medium doesn't get you on the phone right away? Like, those are important things.
You're not giving professional readings?
No. Yeah. So I'm not giving professional readings right now. I have given professional readings in the past. And then I've gone on a hiatus because once I started the podcast, I started to get a lot more information and a lot more learning. So I'm actually going through like a restructuring of how I do my business, because I feel like when I first started giving readings, I would do it the way that other mediums would do it. I would, you know, you want, like I said, there'd be mystery there and you kind of, without understanding, just like set up the way that you're doing business. And I would give readings at lots of events and different things like that. I'm wanting to step back, do the podcast, and then restructure the way that I give readings and how that looks, how that works and what it looks like. So at the moment, I'm not giving professional readings because I feel like I'm getting such wonderful information through this learning journey that I think it's going to change the way that I go forward. And honestly, talking with people like you and having these kinds of experiences and realizing what it's like from the other side should be lessons for mediums as well, right? If you're doing mediumship, just like in marketing, listen to your audience. Listen to the people that you're giving readings to. What are their concerns? What do skeptics really feel and think, right? How can you tailor the service that you're providing to make them feel more comfortable, to prove the evidence, right? Because that's what we're here for, to give evidence, give evidentiary like support to people. And if somebody walks away and they don't feel like they got that evidence, or they feel like they're questioning it, then you didn't really do your job because you weren't listening to them, right? So I think that there is a new wave that's happening in mediumship that I really like, that has to be, like I said before, speaking with spirits and people that have passed over in a much more human way, demystifying the process a little bit and structuring around you guys, right? So I feel like in the past, mediumship is almost untouchable. There's like this mystery around it, and that they have to come meet you. You're the one with the talent or whatever. And if they question you, then it's a problem, or they're an unbeliever and all of this. So I'm seeing a very positive shift in these sorts of things. So I think it's important for people to incorporate that into their businesses.
One question that I have, and it's something people at Forever Family make fun of me about. And it was something that I thought, can fingerprints? There were two medium readings I got, and they asked for paper checks or money orders. I did money orders, so it wasn't in my name. And they asked me to fill out a paper in advance. And I wore rubber gloves whenever I touched it, because could there be fingerprint recognition technology? That might be more police work, but can the average person ever get information from fingerprints?
First of all, even for like a governmental body or any like law, legal authorities or whatever, they'd have to have your fingerprints on file to begin with. So some of the ways that they would do that is they have this program that some local law enforcement agencies do, where you take your children and they'll fingerprint them and they'll get all of this information on file So if something happens to your child later, you already have this evidence to help them with an investigation. So that's something that you'd have to give consent for. If you've been arrested in the past or you've been taken to a county jail or whatever, they'll take your fingerprints, that sort of stuff. So that's, you're not giving your consent there, but you kind of are by breaking the law. You would have to have, for some reason, consented to give up your fingerprints. So they have a huge fingerprint database where they keep adding these in. But if you've never had your fingerprints taken specifically by an authority like this, it will not be in the system. So they'll even have cold cases and stuff where it's like, we found fingerprints, but nobody matches it in the database. So because maybe they haven't had a previous arrest or whatever, we don't know who they are. And second of all, it would, for the average person, we do not have access to this database. And one of the reasons why it's not really viable for like private practice or something like that is, first of all, it's confidential information. Like, you have to like subpoena this stuff or have a reason that is approved by a governing body, like a judge or something, to be able to get this information. So it would not be viable for like a private software company or something like that to do this, because they'd have to compile a bunch of fingerprints from just the general public. And how would they do that in a way where people want to give that up? So that's not something that's really that is a concern. One thing that, you know, could potentially be something, if they know like your full name and your some of your private information, maybe from social media, things like Ancestry.com or 23andMe or something like that, they might be able to see part of your family tree. So if you have a grandparent or something that's passed and they are smart enough to figure out how to get into your family tree or that sort of information, they might be able to say, oh, I see your grandfather that's passed here, and maybe have like a name. But that would require some sophistication as well, because not all these family trees are open to the public. You kind of have to have an account yourself. And again, that's not real detailed information. You have like census records and names and dates of death and birth and stuff like that, but nothing that should be considered like evidentiary details.
Right. Like, what's the nickname your grandpa used to call you when he tucked you into bed at night when you were a little kid, when he'd visit? I mean, those are the types of things some mediums get. Also, it's interesting. I will say that my readings are both better than and not good enough to show that people research, if that makes sense. If they did the research like that, they would say, you grew up on address, your father, full name, passed at this date. I've never gotten that. So it's not that good. Then it's better than that in the sense, like, again, your father and you shared this memory, and, you know, things that are not available in public records and not available on my social media. It doesn't mean some people didn't post that stuff, but stuff that's not on my social media. So.
Right. And I would say too, if you're going to, you would like to hear from a specific person. So like, if you have a childhood friend that you grew up with who passed maybe in their early 20s or whatever, and they had social media before they passed, if somebody really wanted to try to make a connection, like they go to your social media and maybe they see that you're friends with this person or you've posted about them or whatever, and your friend that's passed has had social media and maybe didn't make that a private account, it's possible that they could get to that as well. Again, it would take digging and investigating and all this other stuff, and the profile would have to be, you know, open and all of that. But I would also Google the people that you're wanting to hear from. So like, if I wanted to hear from my childhood best friend, Google myself, and then I would Google them as well and check out their socials to see what's available there too. And I've even had where I've talked to people that have sat before. A lot of people say they still feel a connection with somebody that's passed, right? So this particular person, it was a childhood friend. He was an older gentleman, but he went to college and everything with this person. And he felt very connected to him. He felt like he was still around, all of that. And if you feel that, he specifically I think it was the night before, the morning of his reading. Hey, John, I'd really love to hear from you. You know, if you're really there and you're really making contact with this medium, can you show her this random thing or say this random phrase or whatever? And the medium brought that up. And it was a very much like random thing where they said, you know, mention this, you know, if you feel that connection. I'm not saying that that can happen every time. A medium doesn't really control everything that they can get from a spirit that comes through. But I think it's an interesting experiment. And I would love to, I don't know, have some more data or experience from people who have a specific thing in their mind, or ask, you know, a random somebody that has passed over to bring something up, because there is a chance that they still hear from you, even if you're not a medium or you're not psychic. Like if they can stick around us, they check up on us, all of that kind of stuff. So it's worth a try to just be like, hey, mention this experience, or remember when we did this, we went skinny dipping or whatever. Like, think about those instances and maybe ask for it to be brought up. I know it's not a fine-tuned scientific way to go about it, but I've heard multiple times that people have done that. And that was the real thing that stuck out to them and really made them feel like this is real, because they asked their past loved ones to say it or bring it up. And they did. The medium did. So just something to try. I'd be interested to see how often that could happen.
I've had that. Sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't. And yeah, even sometimes when it hasn't, they've brought up other really evidential things.
Right. Yeah. If you're channeling them and thinking about them before you go in, it's more of a chance that they'll come through with the reading as well. So.
Hi. Can I ask all of you listening a favor that would be so helpful? Would you mind rating and reviewing this podcast on whatever app you're listening? Even just clicking the star button to rate would be so helpful. With lesser-known podcasts, ratings make a huge difference in the algorithm and whether new listeners can even find this podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Is there anything else you want to add before we end?
Yeah, I think just the only thing is, like I said before, if you're a medium or you're looking to become a medium, listen to the people that you're going to be reading for. This is a wonderful podcast for that. I will absolutely be telling my medium friends about it, because I think it's important to hear from the other side. And I would even say, if you're a sitter and you're really interested or you're skeptical, go listen to what mediums talk about with each other. Like, go see what they're doing or how they, you know, if you understand the process of mediumship better, it'll make a lot more sense to you as a sitter when you go in. So I think that just both sides can just take time to understand each other, and it would be a lot better of an experience for everybody around. But yeah, other than that, I think we've covered some really amazing things, some really like helpful, valuable stuff. Yeah, and I just appreciate this podcast and your book in general. I think that it's really important, especially for people that are sitters, but also people like me who are working in it. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. And where can our listeners find you?
The podcast is The Psychic Apprentice. You can find us on all major podcast streaming, Apple Podcasts and all of that. You can also find The Psychic Apprentice on social media. We make sure that we post about all of our episodes and some of the shorter, impactful stuff happening there. So I think if you follow the podcast, you'll also be exposed to lots of other very, very talented mediums and their points of view as well. So if you're looking for a specific person to read for you, it might help to actually listen to an episode, because you really get to know that medium before you even book with them. So I think that that's helpful. Other than that, I'm not doing any readings at the moment. I'm going through a lot of work on myself and my talents as well. So when I do start reading again, I'm giving the best top quality stuff that I can. But I will absolutely be letting people know through my social media and the podcast when that happens. We don't have a website right now. We do have one that's under construction. So within the next couple of weeks, I'll have a new shiny website up there. And when I do start reading again, or if I do any sort of workshops, which is coming in the future, some of the mediums that I have on my show, I'm really bringing together a workshop where you'll be able to work with multiple, like very experienced mediums. I will be posting that on the website as well, which would be thepsychicapprentice.com.
To get more information on what the fuck just happened, go to WTFjustHappened.net. There you can order my book, WTF Just Happened, A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife. You can learn all about how I came to conclude that there most likely is an afterlife, but you can also learn about the early stages of my grief and the amazing, fascinating people I met along the way. You can read about how much I harassed the mediums and scientists trying to get evidence to see if the mediums were cheating and see if what everyone was saying actually was true. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to stay updated on any new developments and any interesting new what the fuck updates. So if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It makes such a difference, especially for a new podcast like this one. And if any of you have had a crazy what the fuck yourself, have any questions, feedback, or just want to say hey, reach out on either Instagram at WTF_just_happened_, or email me at hello@WTFjustHappened.net. I love hearing from all of you. It makes my day hearing your stories and questions and feedback and all of it. And remember, you don't have to draw any final conclusions as you wonder, what the fuck just happened?